Warning: this program contains content that may not be suitable to some listeners. It contains decency, truth, ageless wisdom, a father who cares. It's Generations with Kevin Swanson.
Folks, this is Kevin Swanson. The program is Generations. This is the program where we look at the world through the eyeglasses of a biblical worldview. And I am a father of five, so I care about the world in which I'm raising my children. I expect you to, too, and that's why you're tuned in to us. What's in the news today? Well, a slew of stories from this morning's newspaper on more teachers messing with students. This comes across the paper just about every day these days. A former high school basketball coach gets 15 years to life for messing with a girl on his basketball team. He worked at Regis in Denver Christian Schools. And a 35-year-old female high school teacher out in Douglas County, I believe, goes to jail for 2 years for messing with a sophomore boy. And here's another story about the schools. This comes from the Denver Post. A third of the state's high school graduates are showing up for college without adequate skills, and they have to take remedial courses. It's just getting worse. I can remember when I was in community college, a couple of my professors were griping about how many basic arithmetic classes and algebra classes, reading, writing classes, the community college had to proffer. It was a huge drain to the budget, and it's only getting worse. 2 years ago, 25% of students needed remedial stuff in Colorado. Now, 2 years later, 30%. So it's just getting worse. But we've got to save those schools, Dave.
Kevin, to be fair, there are no remedial socialization classes required.
As far as we know. Well, even in affluent areas, apparently half the students in some affluent school districts. Okay, we're talking not inner city, we're talking
Cherry Creek,
those sorts of school districts. 50% of kids need remedial lessons when they get to community college or university. It is a crying shame. But in other news, the Dover, Pennsylvania case is over. You know, this was the issue over intelligent design, whether there ought to be intelligent design in high schools in Pennsylvania. And a federal district court judge said that people are trying to sneak God into schools. He can tell this intelligent design thing is bringing creationism into the schools. He says creationism in disguise. Now, my theory for years has been this. I thought that science classes were trying to sneak atheism into the schools.
The judge was very consistent. He wanted to make sure there was no intelligence in science, and to prove it, he decided with no intelligence.
Right. There is no intelligence in Pennsylvania schools. That's decided by a federal court district judge who is so addicted to the materialistic, naturalistic worldview that he cannot stand the possibility of the existence of God. In other news, a California State University in San Bernardino. I've been to that CSU school when I was student body president at Cal Poly. That was another CSU school in San Luis Obispo, something like 20 years ago. Anyway, this CSU in San Bernardino has refused to allow a Christian group to organize on campus, saying it would discriminate against non-Christians.
Well, yeah. That's why it would be a Christian group.
Yeah. You know, I'm trying to think of every other group on campus. You know, those groups that meet for knitting are certainly discriminating against the non-knitters.
Yeah, now you're nitpicking.
Yeah. The Christian Student Association's proposed constitution included a statement on sexual morality. Required members and officers to be Christian, and state law says that's no good. Can't happen in California. Can't have a Christian group in California. Can't have a Christian church either, because Christian churches are going to be, you know, discriminating against people who are non-Christians. We are not permitted to charter them under Title V, says Christine Hansen, Director of Student Leadership and Development in the Office of Student Affairs. Similar controversies are all over California. Apparently, a group called the Alliance Defense Fund, we've known them, we interviewed them on this program from time to time. Anyway, the ADF filed a lawsuit last month against the California State University campuses in Long Beach and San Diego, alleging that the Cal State system-wide policy is forcing students to abandon their Christian beliefs if they want to benefit that other organizations receive. Also, remember, evangelical high schools are suing the University of California for refusing to recognize Christian worldview-based courses. As it turns out, what is all this telling us? Well, as it turns out, Neutrality is impossible. The days of détente. Ah, the beautiful days of détente. Remember the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s. The days when we could all live together in peace. The famous Rodney King quote, can't we all just get along? Remember the days when non-Christians and Christians could get along. Remember the days when those who rejected a biblical worldview and those that accepted a biblical worldview could all live together in peace in the same college. Those days are over. Ladies and gentlemen, today we want to talk about détente. Is neutrality possible in education? Or did Jesus come to bring a sword? We'll be back in just a moment to talk about neutrality in education. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Kevin Swanson, the program is Generations. What is going on in a world where the University of California is saying you can't have a Christian club if you are discriminating in some sense against non-Christians? What is happening with the Dover, Pennsylvania case decided by a federal judge today where he concluded that we're sneaking creationism into the schools and that's unacceptable. Intelligent design is out in Pennsylvania. Are we losing the concept of détente? You know, I think there's a lot of people out there, Dave, that think neutrality is possible. Somehow, like Rodney King said, we can all get along with each other, and we can sit in the same science classrooms and all agree on the fundamental presuppositions or worldview underneath that class.
There's people who think that?
Ah, yes, there are. Well, they send their children to those schools day in and day out, expecting somehow to get a good education.
Really? So they think that we can all agree on, say, oh, what is the basis of knowledge?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the basis of knowledge, the fundamental foundation of knowledge, the fountain of all knowledge, according to the Word of God, according to the Bible, if you're going to take a biblical worldview, you assume the existence of God. That's basic. That's essential for your science, your history, your literature, any kind of knowledge. The beginning, the foundation of wisdom and knowledge is the fear of God. Proverbs 1:7. It's God's textbook, and if you don't buy into it, you're not buying a biblical worldview. Okay, so we've got in Exhibit 1 a biblical worldview where the beginning of knowledge and wisdom, the foundation of your history, science, wisdom, knowledge, anything, any kind of wisdom and knowledge, is the fear of God. You recognize God's existence, and you live as if he exists, and he's watching you all day long. Okay, that's Exhibit 1. That's Worldview 1. Worldview 2 is the worldview that is naturalistic. It's not supernaturalistic. It doesn't believe there's anything beyond the physical, natural world. That's its assumption, that's its worldview, that's its metaphysics, that's what it holds to, and that's the basis upon which this judge made this decision in Dover, Pennsylvania.
So he thinks that only things that we can taste, touch, feel, hear, or measure with instruments are real. He doesn't believe that there's anything beyond that that could be real. For instance, his love of his wife, assuming he has a wife, is not real.
No, love is not real because you cannot touch, feel, smell love. Love is a concept. Neither are words. Neither are concepts real.
His thoughts aren't.
His thoughts aren't real.
So we should just ignore them.
We should just ignore them, right? Because his thoughts are nothing. They may be like grass growing in the yard, biological, chemical processes working in somebody's brain, but beyond that, it is nothing. He is a naturalistic materialist. He thinks of himself as a piece of cosmic dust floating around a universe of pure chance. That's his worldview. That's who he is. That's who we are. Now, we all know where this debate started. It may have started before the Scopes trial, but the Scopes trial was a key moment in American history when the naturalistic materialist came in and said, we're going to stop talking about God, and we're going to start assuming we're just advanced cosmic slime that has somehow made it to a little bit more of a complex stage.
In fact, the Scopes trial, a bit of historic irony, is they wanted to be able to teach evolution. They want to bring the textbook and teach evolution in a school district that said that you're going to teach creationism only. And so the whole Scopes trial was about whether or not you could teach parallel theories.
Well, and the entire controversy surrounded a book called A Civic Biology, Presented in Problems by George William Hunter. And this was the textbook that Scopes was trying to teach in this school in the state of Tennessee. Now, chapter 14 of Hunter's book, adopted in 1914 by the state of Tennessee, includes standard material on evolution with protozoa, worms, insects, reptiles, birds, and mammals. Man is grouped with ape-like mammals, etc. And Hunter is basically saying that man is an evolved, more complex structure that has worked up from the protozoa. Now, he's got a lot of stuff in here. He talks about eugenics in chapter 17, where he says, just as we want to see survival of the fittest among domesticated animals or amongst the protozoa or any other form of animal, we also want to see the survival of the fittest among the Homo sapien, among human beings. And so he was very pro-eugenics, as was many others that were teaching and taking the implications of a naturalistic, materialistic, survival of the fittest type of worldview, like Margaret Sanger.
Or like Klebold and Harris.
Oh, absolutely.
Klebold and Harris actually studied that chapter, it would appear, and just went and did the application. They did the lab work.
They did the lab work, yes. Klebold and Harris, of course, being the young men that engaged in the Columbine Massacre and did so with T-shirts emblazoned with the slogan, survival of the fittest. And on their websites, wouldn't it be great if survival of the fittest took its course in our high school? That was their goal. And they worked it out. And as far as they were concerned, I guess they were the fittest.
Well, they were very consistent with their philosophy. They were consistent with what they were taught in evolution. So
they were at least well-armed. I guess we could say that.
They were at least well-armed. And, you know, Hitler was a eugenist. He decided that he could improve the human race if he would just wipe out millions and millions of inferiors. So we can see where this leads.
Instead of striving for neutrality, what I'm saying here today, folks, is let's strive for consistency. Let's encourage our evolutionist friends to be consistent. Take their worldview to the umpteenth degree. They have no basis for ethics. If they believe in survival of the fittest, then take Hunter's A Civic Biology and start incorporating it. Excuse what Klebold and Harris did. Start weeding out the unprofitable ranks of society, as Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, wanted to do.
Instead of no child left behind, we leave behind all the inferior children, right? We leave out those races or those people with handicaps. We just push them to their limits. So say, you really like this stuff, so be consistent.
Again, the Scopes trial was defending the use of a book by George William Hunter called A Civic Biology. And in this book, he brought out studies that have been made on a number of different families in our country, in the United States, in which mental and moral defects were present in one or more of the original parents. For example, he gives an example of the Jukes family. The first mother, known as Margaret, was the mother of many criminals. In 75 years, the progeny of the original generation cost the state of New York over $1.25 million. Besides giving over to the care of prisons and asylums, over 100 feeble-minded, alcoholic, immoral, or criminal persons. And what he does is he traces these people. He traces the Kallikak family, a family that was traced back to the War for the Revolution, wherein a young soldier named Martin Kallikak seduced a feeble-minded girl. She had a feeble-minded son from whom there had been, to the present time, 480 descendants. Of these, 33 were sexually immoral, 24 confirmed drunkards, 3 epileptics, and 143 feeble-minded. The man who started this terrible line of immorality and feeble-mindedness later married a normal Quaker girl, and on it goes. The point is, he's trying to make the point that parasitism has a cost to society. And if we can weed out these parasites, if we can begin to incorporate a civic biology, if we can bring evolution into the civic realm, we can begin to manipulate the social situation in our society and hopefully, according to this guy Hunter, eliminate the undesirables. This is the point of Hunter. This was the basis for the Scopes trial.
And this is what you say, if we're going to at least teach evolution, we should be consistent. We should go all the way. Go ahead and put it all out there. Make them swallow the whole horse pill.
That's right. The ACLU, the science departments and major universities, public school officials, they need to bring all this stuff out, admit that they are evolutionists, they are naturalistic materialists, they want to weed out inferior races, they have no basis for ethics anyway, so it really doesn't matter how anybody behaves, doesn't matter if Klebold and Harris did whatever they did. There is nothing in a closed universe, there is nothing where there is no God to establish any kind of an absolute ethic. They need to just come out and say it. We don't believe in ethics. We believe in survival of the fittest. We think Hitler did a good job with his eugenics, and we are evolutionists. Okay, that's their worldview. They can have it. I don't have that worldview. My worldview states that God exists. God is a standard for ethics and morality. God is included in my metaphysics. And I'm not cosmic dust floating around a universe of pure chance, Dave. Your worldview has implications. It has consequences. There is a reason why evolutionists do not respect the value of life. All the way back to this hunter guy who thought we ought to weed out the undesirables in society. And what is happening in our society today with guys like Dylan? We've talked about this little four-year-old boy who was a little bit of a pain to his mother. There's no question he is a trial. He is a trial. And yet, what did they do to him?
Well, they killed him because he was too expensive. He wasn't worth the cost to them.
Which is exactly what Hunter said in his book.
It's really ironic to me that the naturalist biologists study life, but they don't love life. And Hunter is very consistent in that he realizes that his biology will produce ethics. You know what? We have a different set of ethics, but we also have a different biology, because our biology is based on the idea that there is a God and we're created in his image, and Dylan had value.
Now, the encouragement here to our listeners today is be consistent. If you are an evolutionist, materialist, naturalist, be consistent. Now, in your consistency, I'm coming back and saying you've got a bad worldview. You've got a bad naturalistic biology. You've got a bad ethical system. You've got no basis for ethics. You've got no basis for human language or human thought. We just established that apologetic, but I'm encouraging naturalistic, evolutionary judges like the guy who decided the Dover case to be consistent. Now, secondly, I'm turning to the rest of you that are listening right now and saying, I'm not an evolutionist. I'm not somebody who wants to do away with undesirables like Hunter did in his civic biology that was argued in the Scopes case. I'm not that. I believe that I am made in the image of God. God exists. He established his law, his morality. He's important to me. I love him. I want to walk with him. I am going to turn to that group of people right now and say, be consistent. It's the same message. Be consistent. And Dave, in the end, we're going to discover that there is no neutrality.
The only thing that can be neutral is my car's transmission. I can be in neutral. But, Kevin, the problem with that is when my car is in neutral, it can only go downhill. It can't go anywhere but downhill. And I think that's what's happened in the Christian community. We thought we could be in neutral, and we've gone downhill in a big way.
Let's be consistent. Let's give our children a consistent worldview in their science, in their history, in their literature, in all areas of study, because the beginning of wisdom and knowledge is the fear of God. And I've got the Word of God to back me up on that one. We'll be back in just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Kevin Swanson. The program is Generations. Today we're encouraging everybody to be consistent. Whatever worldview you uphold, be consistent with it. And those that uphold evolutionary Darwinism have always gone the way, eventually, of eugenics. The survival of the fittest is the doctrine taught by these guys. And Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, was one of the most consistent propounders of the evolutionary theory. In her book, The Pivot of Civilization, she unashamedly calls for the elimination of human weeds. Those are her words. Human weeds, for the cessation of charity, for the segregation of morons, misfits, and maladjusted, and for the sterilization of genetically inferior races. Those are the words of Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, another big evolutionist. Well, again, our encouragement is be consistent. If you believe there is a God, and if you believe your children were made in the image of God, and they're not cosmic dust floating around in a universe of pure chance, if you believe that, then give your children an education in the fear of God. The beginning of wisdom and knowledge is the fear of God. We offer an introductory seminar that encourages parents to educate their children in the fear of God. This introductory seminar is being handled in Colorado Springs and Denver in January. It may be time for you to sign up for that seminar. If so, call 877-842-CHECK. 877-842-CHECK to sign up for our introductory seminar, or check.org on the web, chec.org. You can interact with this program by emailing me, kevin@check.org, and you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.